This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
All right. So, welcome to the Adventure Mamas podcast. I'm Nikki and Ashley, and I'm not Nikki and Ashley. I'm Nikki. We are Nikki and Ashley. And today we have a friend of mine from college named Kelly with us, and she's our first guest on the podcast. And I'm so excited. Yay! I went to college with Kelly. And I don't know about you, girl, but I was a very, very different person.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, you know, it was a small college, so we overlapped some circles, but, like, we both knew each other, but not very well. But from what I perceive, like, we both live in very different lives now.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And you traveled the world before you were married. Didn't you like backpack the world?
Yeah, I backpacked around the world for a year before I was married.
You were
dating? Can we just talk about that for a second? Like, let's just land there 2 seconds in.
Yeah. You want me to talk about that now?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Ashley's very interested.
So after I graduated from college the first time, a bunch of people were doing things kind of affiliated with the college or whatever. And I was like, I got to do something outside of this circle. I want to go with an organization and do something where I don't know anybody. And so I found an organization that basically partnered you with different nonprofits around the world, and you would literally live out of a backpack. So I had a backpacking backpack that I lived out of for a whole year, and every month I would get sent to a new country and volunteer at a new nonprofit for the whole month, and then they would send me to a new country the next month. And so I went to 11 different countries on 3 continents and worked at a variety of different nonprofit. So I went to Dominican Republic, Haiti, Honduras, Guatemala for the first section. So that was in Central America. I worked a lot with like in slums, like literally people like living in trash, like providing food, helping in orphanages, helping just in all different like very poverty oriented type of nonprofits. And then I went to Africa for 3 months, and I was in Zambia, Malawi, and Mozambique. In all three of those countries, I worked in orphanages of different varieties, kind of providing support for organizations who didn't have enough volunteers. And then I went to Asia, and I was in the Philippines, Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia. And each adventure in between, I would ride trains to the next country, overnight buses through the mountains. I slept in tents some months. Some months I slept in backpackers hostels for the whole month that they didn't have housing. One time I literally slept for a whole month in a tent on the side of a mountain. And so all sorts of different stuff, mud hut villages, and yeah, it was the adventure of a lifetime for sure. I lived on a $5 a day food budget, so I mostly ate with the locals. And yeah, it was really amazing and exciting, and I'm so glad I got the opportunity to do that.
That's such an interesting program. Like, I've never heard of anything quite like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very unique, and it still exists. Yeah, and they have different kind of like routes, if you will. So you could be like, I'm really interested in going to Eastern Europe, or I'm really interested in going to Africa or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so my route was summer for like a whole year. So I basically followed summer around the world and came back in the summer. So. Yeah.
What was your favorite? Did you have like a favorite location or a favorite ministry, but not, I don't know if it was ministry focused or if it was completely nonprofit focused or both?
It was all Christian nonprofits. Some were more ministry than others. My favorite was probably the country of Laos. Because my job was that month, they didn't actually have any nonprofits in that country, but they wanted to. And so my job was to try to find nonprofits. But the adventure part of it was that it is like illegal to be a Christian there. And so I couldn't openly ask people like, are you a Christian? Where can I find other Christians? Mm-hmm. And so I had to be strategic about it. And me and my like little team that I had of, I think it was like five other people. We lived in a backpackers hostel, and we would like go to these little English speaking corners where people would practice speaking English with foreigners. And we ended up finding this person who like was part of this like remote village in the mountains. And we ended up taking this like little tuk-tuk, which is like a little van, up into the mountains. And we found someone that was a Christian there, and we found this like underground secret church. And it was just a wild, like, it doesn't even sound real as I'm saying it, but it was like literally a wild, just adventure of finding people and talking to people and being curious and just kind of following where God was leading us. So yeah, I love that. And Laos was beautiful too.
Remind me, because I have not gotten out of America in our homeschooling journey right now. Remind me what part, like, where is Laos near? Because it's a relatively small country, right?
It's kind of long, but it's kind of by Thailand. So it's in Asia, South
Asia. Okay. When you said tuk-tuk, I was like, that sounds like Thailand.
yeah, it's very similar to Thailand.
Oh my gosh, that was one of my favorite places that we visited.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So then, once you got back from your year, it does sound wild, your year backpacking around the world, mm-hmm. How long between then and when you got married and went to Zambia?
So I got back in July of 2015. And I got married in May of 2016.
Okay.
So my husband and I, we kind of had like a long distance love. He was in China the whole time I was backpacking around the world. And we would send letters via email once a month to each other. And we kind of knew that we were like in love, but like we couldn't really talk because I didn't always have internet. And so when I got back, we got engaged in October. So just a few months later, and then got married that following May. And then, so we got married May 2016. January of 2017, we knew we wanted to live overseas together. We had both just kind of come back from being overseas, and we really wanted to live overseas. So we went to Zambia together to an orphanage that I had worked at on my trip.
Okay.
And we loved it. I was really missing it. I really connected with the people there and the kids there. And it was in a very remote, like, mud hut village. And I just loved the culture. I loved the people. And so we went and stayed there for, I don't know, like a week or something, 2 weeks. And they asked if we would be interested in moving there. And so we were like, yes. And then, surprise, like a couple of months later, I found out I was pregnant. So we put off moving until my son was born, which was the following December, or that December. So, yeah.
Okay.
And so then you guys moved to Zambia with like a bitty baby.
Newborn. Yes. Little bitty newborn. So his first adventure, if you will, he was a newborn and we moved across the world with him. Our pediatrician thought we were insane. He was like, what are you, what? You're doing what? And I was like, we're leaving to this mud hut village. And he's like, do you know, like, you know, like infant CPR? I'm like, we're going to be fine. It's fine.
That's our pediatricians always think we're crazy. So you're in good company.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so now you, are you a social worker? Is that like your official like path at the moment?
Yeah. So I went back to college. We moved back to America, in 2019. And I was kind of like, what do I want to do with my life? Like we felt like kind of being done overseas, and I really wanted to work with children. So I went back to school and got first my bachelor's of social work. And then I got my master's of social work. So I have my master's degree in social work. But I work as a child therapist. About half of social workers are therapists. And so I work as a child therapist for children who have experienced trauma now.
Oh, okay. And you are a foster mama, homeschool mama, adventurer, future homesteader. Sometimes I just like mention these things to Ashley. Ashley already kind of knows you a little bit, because I'm like, oh, a friend of mine on Facebook just planted an apple orchard and I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I, you know, we just like do stuff. Like I am somebody who, if we want to do something, like I'm just going to do it. Like So there's so many things, but yeah, we foster. So I have two kids now, biological kids. And then we decided to foster. We had bought a house and we had our two kids. I did not want to be pregnant again. And I was like, well, no more babies are coming out of my body, but we have an empty bedroom. So like, let's foster. And so we decided to foster. Our very first phone call, we just signed up for any kid under the age of 5, because that was my oldest at the time. And our first call was for a 1-day-old baby. And they said, we have a 1-day-old. Can you pick her up from the hospital tomorrow? And we were like, yeah. So we did. And we've had her ever since. She's almost 2.5 now. And then her mom gave birth again. And they said her sister was born. Can you pick her up from the hospital? And we were like, yeah. So we have had her since she was born, and she's now almost 4 months. So that's kind of the fostering story. And fostering is a, I don't know how you want to organize this, if you want to talk about each thing like briefly or whatever, but fostering is its own journey for sure. And we just, you know, after working overseas in an orphanage, there's just, people think of like the need being so far away. Like there's orphanages over there, and people don't always realize that there's 400,000 children in foster care in America. And there's not enough beds for them. And often children are sleeping in offices and hotels because people in America don't want to invite children into their homes because it feels scary, which it does. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, we were like, we can't help 400,000 of them, but we can help two. And so that's what we do. And that's what we feel called to. And it feels like a blessing to be able to care for them and be a safe place for them for as long as they need us to be. So that's the fostering journey portion.
I love following along too with your fostering journey. It's really inspirational for me. I hope someday, right now with my husband's career, it's not in the cards for us, but I keep reminding him, I'm like, you got 8 years left, dude. And then I want all the babies. And big kids, I love teens. I feel like are, you know, I love teenagers. I just think they're so cool and they think I'm so lame. And
you know, teens are the ones that we need the most like beds for. I get calls for teens all of the time and I have to say no, just because like our current life isn't ready for that. But I get calls all the time for teens and they just are like, we have to ask everyone because everyone says no. And it's really sad. So
yeah,
someday.
8 years.
Yes.
Did you expect, just as we wrap up introducing you, and then I want to do a deeper dive on some of this. But did you expect any of this? Like, did 19-year-old Kelly think like, oh, I'm going to travel the world and then be a superhero who does 100 things and takes in other people's babies? And
no, you know, I used to joke that like I would never be domesticated. Like I literally was like feral. That's what I tell people. I was like a feral human. I just like was like, I'm never going to buy a house. I am never going to settle down. I'm going to live in a mud hut forever. That's really what I thought. Like I was fine living out of a backpack. I was fine living in like with like two pairs of clothing. Put me in a mud hut. I'm great. And here I am in a house with four small children homeschooling and like planting berry bushes. And I'm like, who am I? No, but it's so good because it's like a different, I guess I thought that this type of life would be boring and it's not. It's just a different type of adventure. And it's definitely far from boring, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Sorry, I know it's hard without my camera on. I am very engaged. You just can't see that I'm on the edge of my seat.
We hear the enthusiasm in your voice.
But my internet is liking this a whole lot more right now. Let's backtrack a little bit to Zambia with an itty bitty little baby. How old was your son when you guys hopped on?
He was, I think, 4 months. Pretty sure. Yeah, he was like still swaddled and stuff. Like he was tiny. And that journey took 2 days. So we flew like across the world, but that wasn't even his first plane ride. We had actually gone to the West Coast before that. I'm from Oregon originally. I do not live there anymore, but, so we had gone out and visited people there. And then, so he had been on plane rides and stuff before. So I kind of figured out how to travel with an infant. But then, you know, we had a long 14-hour, one of our plane rides was 14 hours straight. And then we had another 7-hour plane ride after that. And then we had a 16-hour bus ride.
Oof.
Because we lived in a very, very remote village. And so the airport is in like the southern part of the country of Zambia. And if you want to get to the northern part of the country, you take a bus. So we took a 16-hour bus ride with him. And yeah, we just did it.
Which do you prefer, a bus or a plane with a baby?
Oh, a plane for sure. When I'm talking like bus, I wish I could like input my image into your brain of what the bus was, because it was like, so imagine like one of those tour buses, like you see like those giant buses, like if you're going like on some sort of tour in a city, but picture it full of very loud people with very loud African music on like blaring speakers. And like every hour stopping and people buying like random things outside, like markets, and is very chaotic and very loud. And lots of interesting smells. Whereas the airplane ride, we flew on a very nice airline. They provided meals. It was quiet. Like, no, bus ride is wild.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned smells, because between just different places smell different, and it's different isn't bad.
It just
is, but it's different.
It's different.
And when I was in Japan, like getting used to that was was a journey. And the crammed trains that we were on with those smells was a journey. I can't imagine 16 hours in an environment like that.
Lordy. Yeah. You know, some cultures, and this is not a knock on it, because it doesn't bother them. It's just, oof, a ladybug just fell on my head. They don't wear deodorant there, and it's just, that's just part of their culture, and it doesn't bother anybody there. But that's not something that like my nose is accustomed to, and it's like very hot in Africa. Mm-hmm. So that's something that like I really had to get used to and like control my face, you know.
Oh yeah. How did you manage? So then you arrive after that, like, tour de France of a journey.
Mm-hmm.
How was motherhood different? Like, because my imagination can go crazy, but I want to hear, like, if motherhood across the board is an adventure, how is that adventure different in a mud hut in a rural?
Yeah. So thankfully, not that it was much better, but my house itself wasn't a mud hut. It was made of like cement blocks. And something that I needed, and I think this is probably true anywhere, but I needed some sort of familiarity to like feel like I could, you know, when you have your first baby, it's like you nest and you like make your home homey.
Mm-hmm.
And I really needed to be able to do that there. And I think I didn't understand my intense need for that. Like because in my brain, I'm like, I can live in a mud hut forever. But I didn't have a baby then when I lived there the first time. And so my husband is absolutely amazing. And I'm pretty sure he can build and make anything anywhere, including in a middle of a mud hut village in Africa. So he figured out, like, he literally hand dug downhill. I don't even know, like, I wish he could explain it to me. But like he made a downhill plumbing thing so that I could have a toilet that flushed, and like we could flush it and it would go down into like the septic tank so it would feel like a normal toilet. And just little things that made me feel more comfortable, because it was hard, like having postpartum emotions, trying to breastfeed, and which is way more common in Africa. So that part was good. But just trying to figure out how to feel at home in a new place with a baby was its own type of adventure. And I feel like just kind of coming into the feeling of, and I did learn this over time, of like home is where my family is, even if it felt different. And yeah, so it was, you know, everything was different there. I was kind of forced into doing cloth diapers, which is something I'd never done before, but we lived 2 hours from the nearest town with a store. So 16 hours from like a city, but 2 hours from just like a legit store. So I couldn't just like go to the store. It was 2 hours each way. And so I really had to be prepared all the time with whatever I needed. I had to do cloth diapers, which I did not like. And I did not do America. And also the most interesting part of motherhood there was that my baby was very white. And most people there had never seen a white baby before. And so he was like famous. And everywhere we went, they call people, white people there, Mzungus.
Is that derogatory or kind?
Do they speak Swahili in Zambia?
No, they speak English.
Mzungu is Swahili.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Maybe that's just a word for white people. I don't know. But
Ashley's husband is Kenyan.
Oh, my gosh. That's cool. Mzungu is what they say. But they have... like their kind of village language that they spoke, but everyone speaks English because they were colonized by Britain for so long. Mm-hmm. So, but they would say, you know, Mzungu, Mzungu to the baby. And it wasn't, I don't think, it didn't feel offensive. They were
just is what it is.
It just is, like white person, you know, wow.
Oh, okay. So,
but they were like obsessed with him. I remember this one time, this was probably one of the coolest experiences there, but they would have this giant festival to celebrate the chief every year. And there would just be literally like, would you say thousands of people probably? Yeah, like thousands of people walking through the streets, kind of like chanting and celebrating and then they would do these dances. And so we were sitting outside of the orphanage with my baby, who's like a baby. And everyone's supposed to be celebrating the chief mother, and people were like pointing to him, taking pictures of him, like he was literally like famous. And I have this really funny picture of him in, we actually brought a bouncer with us. We like broke it down and put it into a suitcase, so he's like in a bouncer. He's probably like 7 or 8 months old with like probably, I don't know, 30 people surrounding him, and he's just trying to bounce, and there's like all these people watching him in like a giant circle. So that's what motherhood was like there. People were obsessed with him. Everywhere I went, he was like a little famous person. So
I love that.
Was that fun for you, or was that anxiety inducing?
It was fun, but I was often very, like, I literally, this is bringing all these memories back. We went to the lake one time. There was a lake near us, and there was this woman with a baby, and she legit asked me if we could swap babies. She was like, you can have my baby and I'll take your baby. I was like, I'm good. Like, it was like, so I was very aware that people like really were like just in awe of him because he just looked so different. Like, it was just nothing that they'd seen before. So I would just wear him in like the baby wrap, which is really common there. So it wasn't like offensive or anything. People wear their babies on their backs. So I did that. And was just, I guess, always hyper aware of where he was. But it didn't feel scary. I was just, like, aware, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
I mean, somebody couldn't take him and not be noticed.
Right. True. Be really obvious.
The only white baby in town is leaving the village.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ash. No, go ahead. Yours is probably more on topic.
No, I want to hear your thoughts.
What was the actual work that you were doing? And how were you doing it with baby in tow without like your support system?
Yeah.
Or did you have a good support system there?
So our official title was the managers of the orphanage. So my husband basically like kept the orphanage running physically. So he was fixing stuff. He was like kind of a maintenance guy, if you will, managed the maintenance guys that did like the ground stuff. My role was I was over the staff. So there was about 30 women from the village who functioned as nannies, and we had full-time around the clock. So it wasn't like we were all, like, us as the white people were taking care of the kids all the time. It was, mm-hmm. we really wanted people in the village to be the ones caring for the babies. So the babies learned the village language, they learned the cultures, they, that kind of thing. And so I was over those women, like making sure that they, I would do like little trainings with them about caring for babies. Cause these women, amazing at caring for babies, but also keeping in mind that like they weren't educated. So there was some basic things that maybe they didn't know. So I taught them things like swaddling, about like safe sleeping, about anything you can think of. And I would also do little workshops with them about like emotions. I literally did one about emotions. I did some about like budgeting, and I just tried to like help the women with their lives. And then I also was over the volunteers that would come from overseas. So we had a big volunteer base that would come from Europe and from America. And so I would kind of give them tasks and kind of be over them when they would come visit. So yeah, that was my primary goal. And so that kind of stuff was easy for me to do with a baby because I was managing staff. I had my little house that they could come into and I could chat with while my baby was crawling around the house or whatever. Or I could throw him on my back in the wrap because he was pretty little for the majority of it. And walk around the grounds or whatever. And then we would also, we were involved with the kids a lot, but not in so much caretaking role, but we would have like little movie nights and they would come into our house and watch movies. We would tuck every single kid into bed, all 32 of them every night. And so, yeah, so it wasn't like I was taking care of 30 kids and my baby. There wasn't really that type of role. It was more of managing.
I hope this doesn't sound insensitive. Let me know if it is. I'm a very
You're not gonna offend me, you're fine.
Like, I'd like to know how things work and things. So if you're in this small village and you had 32 orphans, were their mothers still in the village? Were they like, how did this scenario kind of come about? And then having local women, like, assuming that it's a small village, unless it wasn't, if it was remote, but not small. But like, were they related? Like, how did all of that relationship work?
Yeah. So most orphanages and orphans aren't actually orphans. And they're usually what we would call, or what they would call, at least in Zambia, half orphans, which is a terrible term to me, but that's what the government would call them. Every single child there, their mother had died.
Okay.
However, in that culture, and culture is really important, in that culture, if the mother died and the father remarried, all of the children from the mother who died would be abandoned. Because the new woman would only care for her children. And so most of, if not all, I can think, I mean, it's been a while now, but maybe two off the top of my head, all had living fathers. But they had kind of abandoned them because their mother had died. And so most of these children had fathers. A lot of them even knew who they were. I remember one kid in particular that we were really close to. His dad would sell fish on the side of the road, and sometimes we would stop and buy fish from him, and we knew that that was his father, but he had remarried and had like five more kids and just had like no interest in this particular kid. And so, yeah, none of them had mothers. So most of the time kids would end up at the orphanage because average scenario, obviously there's exceptions, but average scenario would be like the mother died in childbirth. And obviously she's not able to breastfeed. So there's not really like formula there. There's no one to feed the baby. Maybe some aunt or something. Grandma tried to care for the baby, but couldn't. The baby starts to starve. And then they drop the baby off at the orphanage. And so one of the things I did there that was not happening before I got there was I was like, I feel like this is such a short-term issue, right? Like not being able to feed the baby. Like, what if we supplied, like this sound, when I was there, I was like, what if this is like a poverty issue, not a wanting a child issue? And so that had never been brought up before. And so there was one time when we were full, we could not accept any more kids. And there was an aunt and uncle who came to drop off twins. And I was like, I can't take them, but I also didn't want to like turn them away and have them die. So I was like, I'm going to go to the store a couple hours away and buy a month worth of formula and bottles and teach you how to make a bottle, how to clean a bottle, how many scoops to do, all the things. And then we're just going to see what happens. So, and I did that. I showed them how to do it. And then I was like, if in a month you still feel like you cannot do it, bring the babies back and we'll figure it out. And so I did. They sent them off on their way and I didn't see them again. So I was like thinking worst case scenario, the babies probably died. I was so sad. And then maybe like 5 or 6 months later, I'm at the clinic in the village with another kid. And this random man comes up to me and he goes, do you remember me? Do you remember me? And I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't remember you. And he pulls out his phone and shows me a picture of the twins. And he was like, they're our daughters now. And they were raising them. They just needed a little help. And if we would have stayed there longer, I would have probably made up some sort of program like that, because I really feel like a lot of these kids should have and could have been with their families. But they just, it was a poverty issue. It was an education issue. So, yeah.
I love that.
That story.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to move on from that.
That's it.
I'm just gonna go cry and buy formula for international orphanages now.
But I mean, in the States, it's diapers. Like, there's an organization locally to us that, like, that's, they work with foster families and, like, mm-hmm. with kids in the system. But their main thing is, like, it's diapers. Mm-hmm. Diapers are the number one need and one of the biggest things standing in between a child staying with their family and a child ending up in foster care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the kids in foster care, I think that's probably why I love fostering so much. I'm so passionate about it, is because, and I can say this even about my own foster daughters, it is not a lack of love. Mm-hmm. Their mother loves them, adores them. She just can't take care of them for a variety of reasons. I obviously won't get into the details, but usually that's the case. It's environmental factors. It's poverty, usually. Mm-hmm. It's lack of education, and it's almost like copy paste from any culture. Like if a family is uneducated and doesn't have enough money, they're not going to be able to care for a child. But those are issues that can be fixed by society. So, yeah, it's really sad, and I think with fostering in America, it makes me almost even more angry, because there is enough resources. We just aren't giving them to the people that need them. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say is like your best? So you said when we were texting back and forth before that your son had been on 40 flights before he turned one. What is your best like traveling with kids tips? Tell me all of them.
Help number me. One, number one, and it's going to sound like probably the opposite of what most people do, but number one, do not use screens.
Yeah.
Screens. And obviously he was a baby then, but I've traveled a lot with my kids now. I mean, we just went down to Disney World a few months ago. Like, we're literally going on a 7.5-hour road trip next week. So this is fun. Yeah. Don't use screens, because it overstimulates them. And then it seems like they're like very chilled out, but then as soon as you take the screen away, they're overstimulated and it makes it worse. So don't use screens. I'd never, ever, ever, ever use screens when we're in the car or on an airplane. The other thing is bringing open-ended play items. So for my son at the time as a baby, like I really liked plastic cups because it's just stacking and stacking and unstacking and stacking and unstacking. Or like busy board types of things, buttons, zippers, things that are like they can do for a long period of time. For my kids that are older, I mean, my kids are 6, 5, 2 and an infant now. For them now, I like things like Legos. I even, when we went down to Florida, I bought them each a new Lego set. So it was exciting and there was directions and then they can take the Legos apart and make something new.
I never thought of that on a plane.
Yeah. Coloring books, obviously. But yeah, just like literally anything other than a screen. It always makes it worse, I promise.
That makes sense though, because that's usually our last resort, like for the last leg of the trip, like the last hour or two, I'll let them watch a couple shows on the iPad. And then I'm like, oh, you guys are so tired. Like it's midnight. We're rolling into the hotel. And then they like get out of the car and I'm like, what crack are you on now? I always thought it was just the excitement of like the hotel and getting out of the car, but you're right that it could be the screens contributing to that.
Yeah, it overstimulates kids a lot. So that's always my number one tip. So yeah, no screens and open-ended play things. So
yeah. All right. To just pivot a little bit, and you've talked some about foster care, but being that, you know, 8 years from now, I want to dive into that. What does adventuring look like with foster kids? Like, are there different, like, parameters? Obviously, well, your kids were very young when you got them, so you aren't, there's not too much, like other, like, non-adventure culture already instilled in them. Like, you're really building their
Family
so culture.
There is parameters. You do have to, it might vary from state to state, honestly, but in the state that I live in, they want you to take the kids on adventures because a lot of the kids, I mean, we got our kids as infants, but most of the time that doesn't happen. The only reason we got an infant was because I was a stay-at-home mom and didn't need daycare. but most of the time it's not infants. And so, yeah, so basically you have to get permission from the county that you're in and the child's biological parents. And so I think that, you know, I'm very passionate about having a good relationship with biological parents and not vilifying them because they're humans that are broken just like I am. And so I have a good relationship with their mom. We text and, you know, she'll be like, what are you guys going to do on this trip? And like, I send her pictures and things like that. So she's happy to let us take the girls. Some might not be that way, but I know that a lot of the kids, like I have a lot of friends and I've built really good community with other foster families. And a lot of them get kids that have never left the city that we're in. And so it's exciting for them to go on adventures and do things. And, we took our foster daughter down to Disney World with us a few months ago before her sister was born. And that was so exciting. And, you know, their mom texted me and was like, I never got to travel. I think she's probably one that's never left the city. Honestly, she's really young and I don't think she's ever gone anywhere. So she's always excited to see. And she's like, thanks for taking them. So you have to get permission, but it just feels like an extra step, which is fine. And then we take them and everything is normal after that. You just have to basically tell them where you're going. So,
yeah. What type of things need permission? Like, is it out of state? Is it a certain hour? Like, or like,
it's if you're out of the county that you live in.
Okay.
And it's usually like, if you're staying overnight is when it's a big deal. So like if you're going to go on a day trip, usually they don't care. But usually if you're going anywhere that's out of the county and you're sleeping there, they want to know.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
So like a local hike and stuff or going and doing things like that is very just like the same as with your own.
Yeah. Yeah. We just actually went down. It was like 2 hours away to this like animal sanctuary. We took all the kids. We went with another family and they like rescue animals that have been abused, like farm animals. So we went and like pet cows and saw pigs and we were petting sheep. And so we do a lot of adventuring like that where like it's a day trip and it's fun and there's some learning involved. Not everything is always a big to do. We are going, like I said, out of state next week with all four of the kids. We got permission. And that's like a big to do, you know, road tripping for a total of like 14 hours, both like back and forth. But it's not always like that. Sometimes it's little trips to a farm or on a hike or whatever we want to do. So
I'm curious, too, that just made me think, and this is not in the notes, so sorry. since you homeschool your kids, what does that look like? Your older foster daughter, she's probably getting close to school age, yeah?
She's almost 2.5, so not quite.
Okay. Do you know, like, what that'll look like if she's with you still into preschool or kindergarten years?
Hopefully she'll be adopted by then. That is kind of the hope at this point. After a certain amount of time in foster care, they like make a decision about basically to not keep the kid in foster care forever. So is it realistic to send the kid back to their parent? And if it's not, then they work on freeing the kid for adoption. So because she's been with us so long, that's kind of where we're headed at this point, hopefully. So hopefully that will be the case. Yeah. However, the heart of your question is, can you homeschool foster kids? No, you cannot. So that is one of the reasons that we don't take older kids right now, is because we can't homeschool them. And it would just be a lot to try to homeschool and have kids like in a public school.
Yeah.
It's just kind of I don't understand it. I don't agree with it because I'm literally reporting to the district exactly what I'm doing. So you would think it would be fine, but foster kids have to go to public school. So
This is another bunny trail. We've reached the point of the night where I live in bunny trails. but I'm just curious because Ashley and I have talked. We did an episode recently about nature school because we're both homeschool families with very like early elementary aged kids. Mm-hmm. And her being in Virginia and myself in Georgia, there's some differences in laws. But I straight up told her, I was like, I'm pretty sure, like, because I'm from New York. But I was like, I'm sure that theirs is much different. You have to, what's your reporting like for that? Like,
it's so annoying. I'm like, me and my husband have debated moving out of state. This is just, I can't. So we have to register with the district as if the kids were going to school. So the district has to know like where we work. They have to know everything about us, which I feel so, I'm like, why do I need to tell you this? My kid's never going to step foot in your school, but okay. So we have to register them with the district, and then we have to do a letter of intent. So I have to say, like, basically, like, I intend to homeschool my child blank with this date of birth and what grade I intend to do with them. And then that gets approved. Once that's approved, then we have to complete something called an individualized home instruction plan. That I have to send in quarterly with details about what curriculum I'm using. And then if they're like up to grade level and there's certain subjects I have to complete certain amount of hours for, so I have to do like math. My oldest is in first grade. So for him, it's like math, reading, spelling, handwriting, history, music, PE. Like, for some of that stuff, I'm just like, we went on a walk. Like, that's what his PE is, you know? And the district is usually okay with it, except for, like, reading and math and science, history. They want to know, like, what curriculum I'm using.
What so, if you aren't using a curriculum? Like, I don't use a curriculum.
You have to.
Horrible.
You have to.
I live in Airy Fairland.
This is the most, like, intense, like, I've yeah. ever heard. It's from any state.
It's absurd. It's absurd. And I do like the least amount as possible. Like, I literally write like the name of the curriculum that I'm using, and that's it. Like, I don't give details. Some people like give like details of like, this is what we're learning, and then I'm like, the government can get out of my face. Like, I don't want, I'm not gonna tell you anything extra than what I need to. But yeah, it's wild. And then
you belong in the South.
Just, I really do. Really, I do. Really do.
Just that last statement, like, you belong in Virginia with Ashley. Who,
you know, we really don't honestly like New York. I don't like the politics of New York. It is so just the, I mean, I don't know how much like you guys can keep this or not, but like, we don't vaccinate our kids, and that is like very no-no in New York. Like, we are crazy tinfoil hat people here. And they can't legally can't even go to school, like, and they can't even go to, there's like a couple of private schools around that have homeschool hybrid programs where you can just send them for like half a day once a week. They're not even allowed to do that. So they're basically not allowed. Then there's no religious exemptions of any kind. So unless your kid goes into like anaphylactic shock, you can't get any sort of exemption for any vaccine. So my kids aren't, not only do we choose to homeschool, they literally physically are not allowed by law to go to school. So we don't have a choice. So New York is wild and I hate it. And here we are because my husband's family is here, and family's everything, right? So
here's the game plan, Kelly. And this is like where we're at with our, with my in-laws, is I'm like, we got to move to a place that they love. Like, yes. You yes. give me a list that you want to live in, and we will choose what fits our family.
Yeah, we really, I don't know if we'll be here forever, truly. I know you had wanted to talk about my homestead or whatever, but like, we bought 20 acres of land and we were literally just going to like homestead and stuff, but like, it almost feels like God keeps putting like roadblocks a little bit and like building a house there. Like, we keep trying and then it keeps like not happening, and it's very weird. Like, we should have been able to build a house by now and we just keep not being able to. And so we're,
but
like,
you own land you don't live on.
Yeah, we own 20 acres of land, and we've literally planted like an orchard, we planted 70 berry bushes. We bought a tractor. Like, it's like a whole thing, and we live like 7 minutes away from it, so we go over there often. But like, for some reason, it's like every time we try to go to build a house, it just, we just can't. And so it's almost like we have our homestead with open hands. Like, we keep taking steps as long as we feel like God is letting us have it, but we're like, maybe we're not meant to be here forever. Like, maybe there is going to be a time where we move out of state, because it really does feel like we don't belong here. Like, our values, our lifestyle just does not line up with New York and New Yorkers. So I don't know if we'll be here forever. We had looked at Tennessee for a while. We had looked at just various different states in the South, because we just are more, it feels like the South is more aligned with us.
It's a nice place. You should join us.
Yeah.
I've looked in Tennessee too. We don't think we found like our landing spot for what it's worth. And I don't know. Do grown-ups know when they find their landing spot, or do they just end
if
up?
You, if you know, tell me.
They just stop looking. And then realize years later that they've stopped looking. Yeah. I guess we live here now forever.
Because do you feel similarly, Ash? Like, you're like, I've heard from you, like, mixed things. Do you feel like you've
landed? Oh, like if this is our forever place?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think it is. I mean,
like Virginia or your individual, like your specific, like house or Virginia's home?
Definitely not the house, but probably not Virginia either.
It's on the coast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My husband's family lives in Virginia, is from Virginia, but it's like more western Virginia. It's really beautiful, like in the mountains and stuff.
I mean, there's a lot of things we like about Virginia. Mm-hmm. I think I still envision like a big family homestead with like my sisters and their families. And I know like specifically that some of them will not come to Virginia.
Mm.
Too many taxes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the other thing with New York too. It's the worst.
As a New Yorker, we went to Virginia and that was the first thing. We're like, you want yearly like registration tax fees on all of our vehicles that we paid off and paid a tax.
I own this. This is mine. Go away.
And that's when we were like, nope, guess it's not Virginia either.
Oh my gosh, that's awful.
Yeah.
That's worse than New York on taxes.
In that aspect, there's other like the mass percentage that New York takes is like different. It's all different, you know, but it all sucks.
It does. Leave my money alone.
I want to move to Norway. That's my game plan.
Okay.
So we'll build the homestead
for in Norway.
Yeah. Ashley's family doesn't know, but Ashley knows that the Rothies are
coming to my family homestead.
But now they also know it's going to be in Norway.
Right. I was like, now they know. We put it on the podcast.
Her family actually listens to the podcast.
Aww. I love that.
My husband won't.
He won't?
He's like, I listen to you all day.
My husband's listening to us talk right now.
He's like, no. So in this season of your life, then, how do you define adventure as somebody who is planting roots but holding it with open hands, having a lot of kind of unknowns, it sounds like, potential adoption in the future but uncertain with how fostering is going and all of that? What does adventure look like in this season for you?
I think adventure has to be day to day for me right now. Because I can't always go on like grand across the world adventures right now. And so I have to find adventure in my day to day. So like today, for example, we went to the Children's Museum spontaneously and did crafts for like 2 hours, and my kids made these like, here's one actually literally sitting on my table. Daughter made this. And that was our adventure.
Are those toilet
today.
Paper rolls?
They're toilet paper rolls taped together with rubber bands and ribbon and spoons.
So that's STEM. So you can tell New York that you did a field trip and STEM today.
We did science at the museum. New York. So that was our spontaneous adventure today. And then, you know, my kids take piano lessons at actually one of the most prestigious music schools in the whole world. And that's super fun. Like they learn from this woman who is a Chinese immigrant and she has her PhD in piano performance. And like, I love that for them. They go up and they have these like badges that say their name and we like swipe them and they go up the elevator. And they're so cute. And it's just like this, that feels adventurous to me. Like we're interacting with someone from another culture at this prestigious university, even though they're like 6 and 5. and then my daughter had ballet and we just do stuff. I think that's what adventure feels like to me, is like getting out of the house and doing just things, whatever we want to do. And I think that's like the fun thing about homeschooling, is it feels adventurous to me. It feels like if, you know, my kids want to learn piano, I'm going to figure out how to do it in a way that feels adventurous for me. So we're going to go downtown to a music school with a lady from China. And that feels adventurous more than, like, I don't know, buying a book on Amazon and teaching her. And yeah, so we just try to find adventurous ways to do things. And I think being spontaneous is, you know, I'm actually like a list maker and things like that, but spontaneity helps me feel like there's some sort of adventure in my life, like being able to choose what we're going to do today and just doing it and having fun. And I think keeping element of fun in my day-to-day life is really important to get rid of the monotony that can happen with having four kids and someone's always hungry. I always joke if I ever write a memoir, it's going to be called I'm Still Hungry. So there's definitely days that don't feel adventurous, right? Like I feed this one and then number two's hungry and then number three's hungry and the baby needs a bottle. And by the time she's done eating, my oldest is hungry again. And that's like, sometimes my days look like that. But not always. And sometimes our adventure is going to the library and being curious about something. Sometimes our adventure is, I don't know, just doing whatever feels exciting that day. So I think just finding adventure in the day to day is how, and then also planning, like I do plan trips that I can look forward to. So we went to Disney World in May. And then next week we're going to Ohio. We just like do stuff. And, you know, it looks different than like if I was going to go on a 7-hour trip to a different state with just me and my husband, it'd probably look really different than taking four little kids.
But it wouldn't be Ohio for your romantic adventure.
No, but to make an adventure, like maybe we'll stop at a random park just because we want to. Yeah. Like you just make it fun. Like everything can be made fun if you have the right outlook and attitude. Not that I always do, but I try to. So,
yeah, I love that. We're running out of time and I don't want to.
No.
I want to, is it okay if I know that, so like your area of expertise is in mental health and social work and stuff. And I want to talk so much to you.
We don't have to. That. Just talk about whatever, you're in charge. You can talk about whatever you want.
Well, I was wondering if like another time, cause I want to do a dive into that. Cause like, man, how with our lifestyle in society right now, like I'm very aware that my children are predisposed to different mental health things. And then our society is also going to be.
Yeah.
Like, not helping their mental health. And I have no clue. Like, I'm so interested, you know, we're starting to get into more, we're starting to get into the older years where like, I feel like it's going to start making more of a difference, mm-hmm. especially with my oldest and mm-hmm. anxiety and mm-hmm. man, some of his big feelings.
Yeah, we can talk about that another time or not or whatever. Like there's no, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I'd love to pick your brain about that another time, especially mm-hmm. you said that you are wanting to offer workshops. So maybe I'll just take your workshops when you offer them. Like, yes. Help me.
Yeah, I just like kind of filled out this thing to possibly do a little workshop at this conference for adoptive moms, which is exciting to talk about like infant and early childhood mental health. So that'll be exciting. And I just love, that's a topic I'm really passionate about, but I know that it's a little different than what we're talking about today. So, but yeah, it's something I'm really passionate about and didn't know was important until the last like 5 years or so. Like, What do you mean a 2-year-old's mental health? Like, yeah, it's actually really important. So
I'm fascinated and intrigued. And I know like it doesn't quite fit into adventuring, but it certainly fits into momming. And I mean, it probably fits into adventuring too, to be quite honest, because I
having
feel like
good children with good mental health makes adventuring easier. I'll tell you that.
For sure. And I feel better. Like my mental health is better as a mom when we're out of the house mm-hmm. or doing something that we enjoy. So we want to, I want to do that. I want to dive into that more just probably another time. My last question, though, along it's not light. is how do you juggle all the things? So you work, right?
Yeah, I work like one full day a week and then one like evening. So I work from like 9 to 5 on Thursdays and then like 5 to 8 in the evening on Fridays. So not a lot, but actually for me, my work is kind of my reprieve. I feel excited about what I do. I love helping kids and families with their struggles and helping them overcome those. That gets me excited, and it feels good to use my brain for something other than parenting, honestly. And so, I mean, it's still parenting. It's just not my own kids. but I get excited about that. And so that's something that I get to leave the house and put myself together and do it. And I love it. And then as far as how I juggle it, I don't really know. I just do what I feel like God has called me to do. And he somehow makes sure that I always have enough strength and grace and time and what I need to do it. And honestly, it sounds like I do a lot of things, and I definitely do, but like fostering, for example, it is a big thing, but most of the time, day to day, it's just like having 4 of my own kids. Like they kind of fit into my life. There's not a lot of stuff that requires like in the day to day for fostering. It's really just about like having them be like your own kids and treating them like your own kids. So that's what it feels like, as far as that goes. And yeah, taking it day by day, I just kind of like make lists and I'm like, this is what I have to do today. And sometimes it's heavier on the homeschooling. Sometimes it's heavier on fostering. Sometimes it's heavier on whatever, like homesteading or whatever. And I complete those tasks that day, and having grace for the seasons where certain areas I have less time for, because I don't always have all the time for everything.
Well, I'm encouraged and inspired by hearing, because it's, yeah, that's a good thing for me to hear, because I get overwhelmed very easily. And I feel like you have more things than you're juggling than me. And I'm like, how are you doing it if I'm a mess with my few things? Like,
you know, one of my mentors, she actually really encouraged me one time. She told me that especially moms, we try to be like 100% all the time. So like 100% wife, 100% mom, 100% homeschooler, 100% whatever. But we're only 100% of a person. And so maybe 30% of myself can go to my marriage, and maybe 30% of myself can go to my kids. And so giving ourselves grace for that, like, we can't be always the best at every single thing we're doing, because we are splitting ourselves in a lot of different directions. And I think that really helped me, because at the end of the day, when I'm like, wow, there's so many things I didn't do today that I could have done or should have done, I'm like, wait, I couldn't give 100% of myself to all of those areas. So I did what I could do, and I did the best that I could do with that portion of me. And I think having grace for myself is probably how I'm able to do so many things, because I know that I can't be perfect at all of them, and I just do what I can and do the best I can in each area.
I like that.
Yeah, that's really good.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly. I look forward to chatting again, hopefully.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, so
good. Thank you.
It's good to catch up, and I'll link. Oh, you said too. I want to highlight that you are for our dearest gentle listeners. You are putting together a book or book resource. Is it a book?
So I am making a, like, basically a ebook on sleep training. So I like made my kind of own method, and I have people ask me all the time. Like, it's gotten to the point now where like my friends I've never met ask me for like sleep training advice. I've had all of my kids sleep trained 12 hours straight by 12 weeks old. without doing like crying it out. And I was like, I should just make, actually one of my friends was like, you should just make like a PDF, like ebook that you could sell for like a couple dollars and just get all of your thoughts down. And then you don't have to repeat yourself all the time and you can make a couple dollars off of it. And I was like, yeah, so I'm doing that. So I'm excited about that. It's like my little side project.
You needed another side project.
Yeah, you know, right? Sound very
my
busy.
Husband, I told him and he was like, of course you're writing a book. Like, why wouldn't you do that? I'm
like, but I look forward to hearing that because my two-year-old still wakes up to comfort nurse. Not even like, I don't even think she's nursing. It's just comfort nursing.
She just missed you.
Yeah. too much still. So we'll be on the lookout for that and I'll link it for our listeners too, for sure. Once it becomes available. So
thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. We'll talk to you later.